All right, Craig is here, so we'll see exactly how ready you are for the podcast. We're the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay, my co-host, Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher.
Yay, you're learning. Only took 3 years.
Not learning, just remembering.
giving my best effort attempt at making an awesome podcast, which is like 13%.
Yeah. It's 12%. 12. Yeah, you will always be Chris to me, or Waples.
Waples, I don't mind. Giganter, I don't mind. There's just too many Chris's now.
Yeah. I mean, really, the only time I ever call you Chris is during the intro for this podcast.
Yeah. What's actually funny about that and sharing a name, my daughter's name is Madeline, and there's at least 20, if not more, Madison's, Madeline's, or some variant of that, like
Mad something else. Yeah,
it's tiresome. But what was funny today was we were having a movie day with the family because I needed to just zone out for a bit given yesterday, which we'll talk about what happened yesterday.
Oh yeah, yesterday was a big day.
Spoilers: the Grumpy Dungeon Master tournament. So
my birthday.
Oh, you're 50 now.
No, still not there yet. Not quite
yes,
that old.
Are. Yes, you are.
Getting close. Not there yet. A couple more revolutions around the sun.
So we order pizza from Papa John's, and we were watching the Super Mario Brothers movie, and it was fun. My wife hadn't seen it yet. It's nostalgia bait. It's a great movie. On top of that, you know, a lot of jokes just kind of go over my daughter's head because she didn't grow up with all the 8-bit Nintendo games, but they're all there and they're all amazing. It's definitely a movie worth a watch. There's a reason it made $2 billion.
Yeah, and I still haven't seen it.
You should, man. It's great.
Yeah. I might at some point.
So we order pizza. And in the middle of the movie, my wife says, "Somebody's outside." And I "Did you hear something?" It's like, "Yeah, I think someone's screaming outside." So I walked out to my door and opened it up. And the pizza was sitting there. So I'm like, "Oh, the pizza got delivered." But then I heard some noise. And I was like, "Hello?" And the lady was like, "Oh, sorry, just me. I tripped. And I dropped some of your pizza. I'll call the store and get them to reorder it for you. I apologize greatly." It's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. What'd you trip on?" It's like, "Oh, I was looking at your doormats. And I just started playing D&D, so I got distracted and I tripped." So that sparked a conversation where she just started playing D&D. She has a bard that's 4th level. And then I gave her pretty much all of our stuff for Grumpy Dungeon Masters and explained who we were and all that stuff. And she's like, "Yeah, I gotta watch and listen. Come out and play." And then I told her that we had a tournament yesterday, and she was sad that she missed it, but she wants to do it next year. So yeah, it was just kind of fun. And the funny part was her name was Christine, which is just Chris, but female.
It's just Chris with a teen on there. Yep.
So
it's always amazing when you're out in it's even more striking that you're just at home and you met another D&D player, but when you're just out and about and you meet random gamers, because I have a tendency to wear, you know, D&D shirts and such, and I'm out checking out at a grocery store, and the little girl who's, you know, ringing me up is like, "Oh yeah, I'm a dungeon master too." It's like, awesome.
One time we had like our food delivered by this like little African American girl, but she was wearing like a Japanese Lolly Girl t-shirt, and her car was just covered in Hello Kitty like stamps.
Yep.
I was just like, You're cool. I like you."
Yeah. Fucking weebs. They're everywhere.
So that was kind of funny. And it's just weird that, you know, you find those people everywhere. And at the tournament, especially, there was so many people that I've not seen. And I know there are even a ton more people that play D&D in the area.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It was quite cool to have the tournament, and we had 7 tables show up for it. Each table had 4 players and a DM, and It was pretty chaotic, but overall, it went great. But so before I jump into that, and all of the stress and headache that led up to that, and the results and all that stuff, is there anything you want to talk about? I'll give you the floor for you have 5 minutes.
Oh no, I can't do mine in 5 minutes.
10.
I mean, I'll take however long I need to take. But
15
yeah,
minutes.
So is it going to be I just cover all the stuff I want to talk about, and then you nod your head, and then I have to do the exact same thing for you for the next 40 minutes?
Yep, pretty much. I'm a player for the next whatever bit.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. I'm going to talk about something I want to talk about, and then you can talk about your stuff, and then I'll talk about something after you're done with all of that.
Okay.
All right. So I'm in the process of converting my 5e campaign over to Pathfinder 2nd edition. And I'm planning on running it here in a couple of weeks, which means converting all these 10th level characters from 5e to Pathfinder. Now, for somebody like me, I get off on that shit. That's number crunching, that's picking feats, that's this, that's that. And for most of my players, that is the same way. Like, as soon as I started, you know, harping on, hey, we need to make characters, they all start researching and diving into this and, you know, really getting into it. But for whatever, yeah, I don't think the same way as everybody else. And it didn't even really occur to me that some people might not want to do that. So I have a couple of players who are really fucking struggling to get these characters converted over. So I've taken it on myself to make it as easy for them as possible. So I'm actually going to one character, I'm pretty much converting him all myself. Another one, I'm going to have to really read over their class and understand it so that I can walk them through the specifics of how this is going to work. Because 5e, you know how simple 5e is. You get your attack every round, you get your bonus action, you get your reaction, and you're going to have maybe like two or three things that your character can actually do. That's the extent of it. Pathfinder is not that way. Pathfinder has a massive amount of shit that your character can do on their turns. So I'm one of the characters that I'm the one I'm primarily converting is a warlock. All right, there are no warlocks in 5e. Warlock is not a thing. Yeah, I see you're doing the So the closest thing they have to that is the witch class, which they serve a patron exactly like a warlock. You get a familiar, pretty much like most warlocks. Most of the spells that are granted to you are cast at your highest level, like a fucking warlock. But you get access to a lot more spells. That being said, a couple of the players really, really liked the way their classes or archetypes were. The warlock in specific, it was taken out of Tasha's. The archetype was the Fathomless. Are you familiar with that one? Yeah, that's the one that can summon up a tentacle that can attack people and block for you and, you know, do stuff like that. Obviously, in Pathfinder, there's nothing that exists like that. So I am taking it upon myself to actually make that a feat in Pathfinder so that the player can play the character that's almost just like a warlock anyway and still have the archetype stuff that class granted them in 5e. I'm also having to do that for the cleric because the cleric in our group was actually a homebrew archetype that I had built myself. So now I'm having to convert this over to Pathfinder. And I bring all of this specifically up because as a DM, if you do something like this, you know, if your players really, really like what they were doing and you're trying to convert, you need to make it as simple and as streamlined as possible for them. And try to not completely alter what their character was.
Right.
Yeah. You have anything to say about this? Any feedback? Any thoughts?
I think that without having played Pathfinder 2.0.
Sure. Yeah.
there's a lot of people that played it instead of Dungeons and Dragons for a while, and I've mentioned this before, who think that the system itself doesn't play well unless you have something that is specifically made for that system. Sorry, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So going out of your way to convert one of the current like 5e classes that works for 5e to Pathfinder, it may be possible, but it's going to take way too much work. And you basically assigned your player as a homework assignment that is probably near impossible to actually complete. And so I can see why a couple of them got frustrated, because the system is just too different to really offer what they were looking for. You know, the Fathomless is a good example, because that's what all Warlocks are now in 5th edition, because that's the meta best. And, you know, the reaction system, I believe, between Pathfinder and 5e, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is completely different. So
no, not really. You get one reaction a turn, same as in 5e.
Yeah, but I'm not saying how it functions. I'm saying how it mathematically matters at the end. So like all the cool reaction feats that like the fighter can get and the barbarian can get, you know, like where they intercept, the feat from intercept, like that can break all encounters at low levels because of just how the math works with monsters and how much damage they deal. When most weapons are like a D8, for example, so that it leads basically intercept basically being, oh, no one's going to take damage until we're at least 5th level.
Well, either that or you throw in one extra monster.
And it still doesn't matter, you know?
I mean, numerically, that's how you break that. Throw in one or two extra monsters, and then, oh, you can't intercept everything because you get one reaction a turn.
Yeah, but the amount of times that you're hitting players is still just one or so. You may adjust that a little bit, but it's not really a thing. And like, you could have a bunch of goblins, like you could have 10 goblins. Adding an 11th goblin to the thing is not going to throw off the calculations.
No, an 11th probably would not. A 12th or 13th would. You have to be very careful doing that, because then it might end up too much.
That leads to my whole point, is that you have to scale higher the CR of the encounter.
Well, CR is broken. We know that. CR right. does not work.
It doesn't work, and like all the reaction stuff is just way too powerful in D&D, and it's a problem with the system. Mm-hmm. So that's why people choose a Fathomless Warlock. Okay, now you're never getting hit. The temp hit points was already kind of bad, but now you can get the temp hit points and not be hit, and right. intercept. Now everybody has a reaction ability in some way, shape, or form that reduces damage that causes its hits not to hit. Hitting people, if you build out the meta team in 5e, you never hit the players. So I don't know if that's a big problem in Pathfinder, but you're introducing it to Pathfinder for sure.
Oh, I don't really care that I'm introducing it, because I am an experienced DM. I will scale shit if it's a problem. We're also talking about 10th level characters, so whatever damage it's going to soak up is not going to be sufficient.
Maybe. But it's a lot of extra work for what may not really be necessary at the end of the day.
Is it necessary for me to go to Pathfinder from 5e? Absolutely not. Is it something I want to do? Absolutely. Is it something?
Yeah, but you're doing is going to Pathfinder and then making it more like 5e. So just
I'm literally adding one ability as a feat. Everything else is still for that character is still Pathfinder. So the cleric, on the other hand, I'll have to add a few, because that's a whole homebrewed thing where I'll have to add a few. But I'm making those abilities feats, because you know they're going to have at 10th level they're going to have 5 feats for their class. So they you know for every ability that they're pulling that I'm pulling over from that cleric, they're going to have to burn a feat. Which means they're not getting the feats that are already in the Pathfinder books. So it like the conversion, I think, works very, very easily. In the case of things that give advantage, disadvantage, I'm just giving them a +2 circumstance modifier. So it's basically a +2 to whatever the number is.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, like I'm just pointing out, like, the whole reason I even brought it up is the fact of this, as a DM, you can do this kind of stuff. Whether or not you're converting, or if you just say, I have never even played 5e and I'm just flipping through books and I'm like, damn, that's a cool ability. Well, I can just make that a thing in Pathfinder, you know, because maybe that's all I've ever run. You know, you have the ability to just create things as a dungeon master and insert them into your game.
Yeah, you do. Remember the Atomic Warlock Barbarian that we reviewed a number of years ago now?
I don't remember it at this point. I think I should, unfortunately.
We made a video about it.
We did?
Yeah, we did.
Not many videos of me out there doing this. Unless you're recording me right now, weirdo.
You can't make anything. It's just, a lot of times I just get tired of
That's the shit I live for, man. That's what makes this game fun to me.
It's not... For me, having to basically take something and fit it into something else, it's just... That's just annoying to me. I'd rather it just, you know, be there and essentially work for me. Like, I understand creating classes is fun. I've created a couple subclasses myself, you know, for the Christmas one-shot that I have.
Yep.
You know, and
which everybody can find on where can they find it?
Man, you're really bad at this. DM's Guild.
Yeah, that's it.
Go to the DM's Guild and search for my name, Christopher Waples, or Grumpy Dungeon Masters, and you'll find it. But like, I understand creating stuff, and it's easy to work in that little bubble. But taking something from one system and moving it to another just sounds like game design, but extra steps. You know, I don't know. Like, it's good. Nothing's stopping you. I'm more than happy to, you know, I'm glad you're having fun with it. And that's ultimately what the end is. I'm just never going to do it. If my player goes up and goes, I want this thing from 5e. I'm like, then we'll go back to 5e.
Well, just saying that you're in 5e and say your players want something. Like, when I was doing 5e, my player never asked me to become a cleric. They were a fighter, I think. And through storyline means they got converted to a cleric. And for the deity, there was nothing like what that deity is. It's a deity of winter and the wilds. And there just isn't a cleric like archetype for that. So I told them I'm going to create this from scratch for them. And they've played it several times and were very happy with it.
But that's still very different than converting it to another system. You know,
I mean, it's still creating it.
One thing, but
I mean, converting it to Pathfinder, most of this stuff is very, very simple because Pathfinder is just D&D. Like, it's not a very different system. Like, if I was trying to convert this to, you know, Dune or Werewolf or some shit like that, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But, you know, from one D&D system to another D&D system, it's very, very simple.
You say you don't like Werewolf?
I love Werewolf. I actually have many of the books.
Why aren't we playing Werewolf?
I've talked about it before with my players. At some point, I would like to run that.
They're never going to do that.
I just wish I had more time to run shit, more time to game. We get to play like every 2 weeks.
This is a new, my stream has been canceled for a month now because my life is so busy.
Yeah.
And that's like the main source of my Grumpy Dungeon Master income. So,
well you're still, but at the same time, you're still running stuff every Wednesday with the Adventures League.
Yeah, but that's more for,
but you're still doing it.
LGS up and running.
You know? Yeah, I know. But you know, that means your tabletop gaming every week and sometimes twice a week.
Mm-hmm. That's fair enough.
So where's
I want to do another stream. I just...
Good luck finding the time for another stream.
Like, I honestly think that we could do another stream on Thursdays. I would just need, like, my cousin Craig or some other DM running it, you know?
Yeah.
And just us playing it. Or I don't know. It's a lot of work to be a streamer. You know, like I've only scratched the surface of that world, but they put too much time in. I don't like, I'm not in my 20s anymore. I couldn't sit there and play Super Mario Maker for 30 hours straight. You know, I fell asleep playing Diablo with you a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times you've fallen asleep during Overwatch games.
Yeah, it's good. I haven't fallen asleep during D&D though, because it just takes too much energy.
Right. Yeah, I would. Now, truthfully, when it comes to DMing, I absolutely would not want to DM more than once a week. At least for me, you manage it twice a week a lot of times. So once a week is all I could handle. I could play. Hell, I could play 7 days a week and I'd be fine.
Yeah, playing's so much easier.
Yeah, playing requires very little effort.
Especially if you're a martial class.
Well, I mean, yeah, well.
I hit him again. All right, yeah. See you in 30 minutes.
Wizards require very little effort for me. Anyway, but yeah, that's mostly what I wanted to talk about. I do want to talk about Dungeon Crawl Classics before we get off of here, since I got to play a first level game. But I will
tell me about that, because I'm actually interested in that.
I will. But I'm going to let you tell everyone about how amazing the tournament was this weekend.
I'm still exhausted by it.
No, we're not doing the rest of this podcast tomorrow. You got to talk about it now. So,
All right. Hold on. My voice still hasn't recovered from yesterday. The tournament went, and it was more successful than last year. It was more successful than I even imagined. There was so much anxiety that I had for this tournament leading up to it and doing it again this year, because last year we had access to Heroes and Champions, which is a store right next to Zenergy, owned by the same owner, that was supposed to be like this D&D/Warhammer tabletop store. Now, that plan has since changed, because Warhammer in this area is very popular, and there are no Warhammer stores except for the official Games Workshop store, but that's in like the rich area of Charleston.
Yeah, of course it is.
And it takes like an hour and a half to get there. You know, it's just a long drive through a lot of traffic. So a lot of people basically just don't make that trip to go do it. It's a nice store. I've been there a few times, but it's just Warhammer. So this store, Zenergy's Heroes and Champions, was made to kind of like fill in that gap and also handle some D&D, and was a lot more space for D&D. And we ran our Adventures League out of that store for a little while as well, too. Because Wednesday's beat was taken over by Pokemon or something like that. But plans have changed and the schedules have changed. So we're now playing back in Zenergy. And now there's Warhammer tournaments happening at Heroes and Champions and painting workshops happening on Wednesdays. So all that just suffice to say that, you know, the store is great. And we had a completely empty store last year when we ran our first tournament. Mm-hmm. We had two tables show up, and we had some people show up that weren't signed up, but we were able to make a third table with some DMs that, like, my D&D player Dimitri was there. He was, you know, a DM, but he didn't need a DM because we only had two, so he actually got to play in the tournament and just kind of like filled in the seat, and we had essentially three tables. So my goal this year was to get more than two tables. I actually have three legitimate tables signed up for the event.
Yep.
And
blew that number out of the fucking water.
We did indeed. So we started, I talked with the store a couple months ago. They were excited to help out and do that again. They're giving me the space to run the store, and, you know, props to the store owner and all of them for that, because I know how much space we were going to take up, you know, and I know that that store is very busy on a Saturday. And so when we got closer to the end of the week, we had five teams signed up, and I was excited. So I had lost some DMs, so I had to basically find some replacement DMs. And I wanted to make sure I had extra DMs in case we had extra teams sign up or show up that were not registered. So I got a call from the store organizer, and she told me that they have a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament at the store on Saturday as well. It starts at 2:00. So they wanted to limit the space that we had to 4 tables. And I go, but we have 5 tables registered. She's like, okay, I can limit you guys to 5. That'll be fine. I'm like, okay, that's cool. We have exactly 5. So like the next day, I checked the sign-up sheet because I wanted to put all the DM's names in there. And there's 6 tables. So I was like, oh, no. That'll be fine. I can run a 6 table on the board gaming table that they have in the back. They bought a lot of furniture from a Subway that went out of business. So a lot of their seats are like old Subway seats and whatnot, like all the trash cans are old Subway trash cans. So they have like this really cool, big, huge circular table with circular seats around it for board games. Super awesome, you know, because board games usually need that 360 around it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can run a game back there and the six table, and I'll be fine, and I won't take up space for the tournament. Cool. 1 a.m. on Friday, I get a text from another group that says, hey, we want to sign up. Is it too late? And I was like, I've already put in the order for all the prints for 6 tables. You would be the 7th. If a table doesn't show up, I'll fit you in as a 6th. Otherwise, you know, we'll do our best. And she's like, okay, we understand. I know it's really late. We should have done it earlier. So she appreciated me trying to, you know, work that out. So that was cool. So day of the, still not the day of, still on Friday. I had put in 6 orders for the prints. So basically 6 manuals or 6 copies of Adventures, 6 sets of character sheets, 6 maps and 6 secondary maps for level 2. I had printed out the character tokens here at home. I was punching those out. So when I put in the order for Office Depot to kind of print everything out, it was very expensive. So I wanted to make sure that it went through fine and successfully. So about 15 minutes after I placed the order, I called up Office Max just to confirm. And after like 30 minutes on hold, I finally got a chance to talk to someone in the printing department. And they told me that the order had been declined. And they wouldn't tell me why.
Good thing you checked.
Yeah. Well, that's due diligence. I'm a professional. So I had to call 800 number to find out why it was declined. So when I'm talking to the 800 number, you know, help desk, and he goes, well, I'm looking at your sheet here. I show no reason as to why it should have been declined. Let me call the store. So an hour before I could get an answer to as to why, he said, I still don't know why it got declined. It should have been fine. However, upon review of the material that you're requesting us to print, we are canceling the order because of copyright issues.
What?
And I'm like, what do you mean you're canceling the order because of copyright issues? He's like, I can't explain anymore. It's a store decision. You'll have to call the store back. So I'm just like, well, what the heck? So I was like, I didn't even get an answer as to why it was declined, you know, because I paid with my PayPal business account and I had more than the amount to cover what the thing was. And they said, oh, I'm going to get a refund now in like 8 business days.
Oh yeah, so of course. Like, yeah.
Right. I hope. So I call the store back.
If not, you'll again, be calling them again.
It takes like 30 minutes for me to get a hold of somebody. And I'm talking to the lady that I talked to before, and she said, oh, yeah, we can't print this out. You're printing copyrighted material. And I was like, all right, can we break this down as to what the issue is? She's like, sure. She was very nice and very understanding. So shout out to her. You know, I wasn't being a dick, like, why you print it or I'll hit you. Yep. You know, nothing like that. That never gets you anywhere.
You won't get anything done doing that.
Right. So I asked her, it's like, okay, what specifically is the copyrighted problem? And I'm thinking maybe it's the incarnate maps, you know, that I made, but I have a professional license for that, so that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the adventure module that I have, because there's pictures in that that are technically licensed by D&D, but they're part of the open source DM's Guild package that you can use. Now, I'm not selling these. If I were to sell those, that would probably be a legal issue.
Yeah.
But I'm not selling them. I'm just printing them out for use. The issue was, I had created all the characters for the event, or actually Dimitri created all the characters for my event, in D&D Beyond for me, okay? And when I save the PDF, okay, when you go to print the PDF, it puts across the bottom, and actually, let me hold on. I'll get the exact text of what it says here. Give me a second, play some Jeopardy music, and everything will be perfectly fine.
And begin the music now.
Do 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 do.
You know I'm not going to cut this if you're talking.
Okay, so it says specifically, trademark and copyrighted 2018 Wizards of the Coast LLC, copyright 2018 D&D Beyond, all rights reserved, permission granted to photocopy this document. For personal use.
There in Magic the Gathering, there is a saying, RTFC, read the fucking card. and that is exactly what this is. Like, it even says, hey, you can print this.
So I go, that doesn't say you can't print this. She goes, well, technically... That's what she said. Well, technically,
yep.
I can't print this for you, but if you brought it into the store, I can make photocopies of it.
Oh my God. And I'm not even blaming her. Yeah.
Right.
It's just,
I was just like, and I'm like,
that's probably a business level nonsense bullshit. That makes literal no sense.
And so it's like, I can bring you these. I mean, they're character sheets. The whole purpose of them is to basically print them out and hand them to your player so they can play those characters.
Yep. Not selling anything. Selling them. Just handing it out.
It's like, and she goes, I don't play D&D, but I think that sounds right. So I'm like, yeah, I was like, I'm completely honest with you. I'm running a tournament today, so these are all for tomorrow. I'm running a tournament tomorrow. These are all for the people that will be playing in the tournament. They get to pick a character and pick a secondary character, all that.
Yeah,
she's like, all right, I'll print these out. I don't think there'll be an issue, but you have to resubmit the order. And she's like, and you need to do it quick because I know you put this order in at 2, and it's now at 3 p.m. We close at 8, so. This is going to take some time for us to complete. So you need to get the order in. So I'm like, oh God, it took me like 2 hours to get this thing in, you know? So I was like, crap. I was like, I'll do it. I'll put it through. I'll put it on my credit card this time. Make sure there's no issues with the PayPal thing and we'll be on our way. So I look at the email that I got where they got the confirmation and I use that as the quick link to get back to Office Max so I can basically start putting in the order again.
Right.
And when I clicked the link, to my miracle surprise, there was a button there that says, buy this again.
Oh, perfect.
So I clicked buy it again, and it put it in the same order, and I was able to pay for it on the credit card this time. I called her back an hour later. I just said, hey, just want to confirm that you got the order and printing. It says, yep, we're actually printing it right now. He should actually be done with this all by 7 if you want to pick it up today. He said, no, it's okay. I'll pick it up tomorrow. All right. So that's when later on that evening, 1 a.m., the 7th team messaged me saying, hey, we want to play.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
So in the morning, I head out and I go pick up the printouts. And I asked the lady, there's a different lady at the store in the morning. I was like, hey, is there any chance you can print me out one extra of all the things that are in my order? And she says, well, it's going to take me a little while, but I can set that up for you. It'd be easier if you did it online. It's like, well, I can't do it online. I'm literally here right now.
Yeah.
She's like, well, can you go back home and do it online? It's like,
No.
I'm literally here right now. I'm going to the tournament later. And she's like, okay, well, hold on. So it takes her 5 minutes.
Oh, that took so long.
It took so long. It took me 2 hours. And I was thinking it'll take her a long time too. No, it took her 5 minutes. She got it set up and I had another set printing. So I pick up the stuff, I go to the store, and all my DMs were pretty much there. Again, I'm not going to thank you all individually. I know some of you don't like your names being out there. But thank you all my DMs that came out and actually helped me with run the tournament. You guys were amazing. You helped out. It ran smoothly. No issues at all the entire tournament, and everyone had a great time. So thank you guys for making that possible. So I get there, and I'm going through and giving them tasks. So, like, I'm going to hang the banner because I'm tall, because that's my only job in life.
Yep. Well, that is that's the rule of being tall, is you have to pull things off the top shelf for people. You got to hang banners. You know how this goes.
Yeah. And then another person, I told him, like, hey, I want you to, you know, these are all the class sheets. I need you to go through and make put them all in piles of six. You take the maps, you flip all the maps over, and we'll get this done. And everyone's like, cool, great, yeah, awesome. We know what we're doing. So we start working all that. And then one of the DMs comes back to me and says, hey, you're missing some of the classes. I was like, oh, what am I missing? He's like, yeah, you don't have cleric, rogue, and wizard.
You don't have classes that you don't have the staples.
I don't have the staples. And I'm like, well, shit.
Like, if you'd been missing warrior, that would have been perfect. It's like, well, everybody gets to play some weird alternate class.
So I call the print department back. I was like, hey, was there another box I didn't pick up or something? And she went through and she looked through the order. She opened up all the things because she was working on the other one right now. I was like, on the printouts that you did when you redid my order, did you have a cleric, warlock, or wizard? She went through and read them all off. She read off like the bard, barbarian, blah, 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 blah. She read them all off. Yeah, I didn't include those in the order.
Oh, no.
And she was very nice. She was like, if you send me the files, I will print them all for you right now. I kind of want to be like, lady, told you I can't go home to get the files. We talked about that earlier. But she was great. She was like, if you give me the files, I'll reprint them all. And I was like, I can't do that. The players are just going to have to deal with not having clerics, wizards, or rogues.
So, yeah, you get hard mode, that's all.
You get hard mode.
It balances out. If everybody in the tournament has that exact same issue, then it all fucking works.
Ultimately, that's why I was just like, yeah, it's a moot point. Let's keep pushing forward.
Yeah.
You know, if everyone has the same problem, that's not an issue. So, I'm going through and getting everything set up. Like, we get all the maps set out and folded in half so you can see, like, the first half of the dungeon. And then when you find the secret entrance to the second half of the dungeon, you can flip it over and there's the second half. And then there's the whole third, the essentially the third level. And it went fine. The tournament itself ran. Everyone was able to pick their two characters. We had nine remaining. So every table basically picked all but one. A lot of people took their characters home. I can't remember what a lot of the characters were. I just know that the paladin that Dimitri made for me, for some reason, was a grung. And that's important. That was important to me, and I wanted to change it, but ultimately I didn't, because one of the questions that I had in the quiz show used them as an answer. Did I go over the quiz?
You told me about it, but you should talk about it on here.
So let me open up my dungeon.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you could just read all of the questions.
I'm gonna read the questions, and I'm gonna,
because there's only 10 of them, and it'll go quick.
I'm going to tell you what issues people had and what I've already fixed on my side. So the first question is, what is the color of all those grumpy?
Yeah. I know the answer to this one.
Yeah, but tell me the answer.
Oh, orange and black.
Just orange.
Orange. Oh, okay. Would you have accepted orange and black?
No. What is the color? Not colors.
Well, that's fair, but our symbol is orange and black. It's not just one of them.
No, it's orange. It's just orange.
And black. You have to have both of them. Otherwise, it's just a big orange blob.
It's orange, black, or detailed lines. There's also white in it, too. Do you want to say it's orange, black, and white?
Yes. I'm staring at it right now.
Orange cats are grumpy. Orange is grumpy. The universal constant.
See, I have already ruined this for you.
What is the name of the hobgoblin on the couch?
His name was Steve.
His name was Steve. The best part about this was one of my DMs had to leave about halfway through. He had a family emergency, and I took over that table. Okay. So they were a little bit behind the rest of the group because they were methodically checking everything. So I basically kind of like, I took over like with an hour left in the tournament. Yep. So I had to basically kind of rush them through the encounter. I wanted them to get to the Craig section of the tavern to meet Craig. And it was a nice, fun, chaotic thing. And I thought they would enjoy it. So they get there and they're doing the things. They're eating food. They're freaked out by the piano mimic.
Yeah.
Because the previous mimics pretty much almost TPK'd them. So they're going through the quiz questions and they go, what is the name of the hobgoblin on a couch? And everybody turns and looks at the girl that was at the table. And the reason why was when I had them go to where the hobgoblins were, they whispered back, hey, it's fireball time. And she went, yeah. And she ran in, cast fireball, and blew up the entire room.
And killed the hobgoblin before he ever
killed
all
the hobgoblins. I didn't even roll. I rolled to see if they would have succeeded. None of them succeeded, so I didn't care what the hit points were. That fireball murdered everybody in the room. So they didn't find out what the hobgoblin's name was. But when I was role-playing Craig, they asked me about the hobgoblins. They're like, I was like, oh, Steve and all the hobgoblins? Yeah, they're my great friends. Why? Did something happen to them? And they were like, no, nothing happened to them at all. I was like, roll deception. My guy rolls deception and gets like a 3.
Oh, no.
And then I had Craig go, yeah, I can see everything that happens on dungeon. It's part of the job. And they all just kind of go, you're not going to kill us, are you? Like, no.
He's Craig. He's not going to kill anybody.
No. So they actually, since I dropped the name Steve through Craig, they got that question right.
Okay.
Next question was, what D&D character lineage at level 1 can kill itself by overusing their own racial ability?
Yeah, and this one was, it ended up being partly correct and partly incorrect.
So one table answered Haragon, and the DM brought it up to my attention. It's like, hey, I think that's actually correct as well, too. I don't want them to not get credit for the question if it's like comes down to a point. It's like, don't worry, I'll handle it. I need to actually see the verbiage for the rabbit hop. I'm pretty sure the intention is for rabbit hop as a bonus action is just to get away from people.
Mm-hmm.
Or get to something, not to go straight up in the air.
Yeah, but if it says you can leap 10 feet, ten feet.
Say what direction? Where the grung one does say that to leap vertically or horizontally. So,
okay.
In either case, I would have given it to them. So I've already changed the rules to say grung or Haragon. So
yeah.
Neither here nor there. D&D 0E is an alternate name to what game?
I disagree. With that, I have never heard it called that. But the answer you had was chainmail.
That's correct. And number of tables got that correct. And on the wiki page, it says that.
Yeah, nobody's ever called it that.
No one ever has. It was a curveball question.
Yeah.
How many mimics are in the dungeon?
Oh, that one I don't remember.
It's 6. I actually read off the intro to the dungeon with my daughter. She's the one that called game on.
Hold on. Okay. So the first time they find it, a room, it was the busted up room, and there were two mimics in there.
Yep.
Okay. Making sure. I know and then you have the piano mimic, which is 1, and then 3.
So
at later.
Very least, so they could have said 3. But when I read the intro out, I make a joke that the designer, my daughter, designed a dungeon with thousands of mimics. And that the decision was quickly and hastily made to limit it to six.
Okay.
So it was a throwaway joke that I read to everybody on the get-go. So if they were paying attention, they knew the answer to it.
Right, yeah, yeah. Which I know one of the other ones.
For not paying attention.
Another one of the questions I never would have gotten if you you definitely wouldn't if you weren't paying close attention.
Yeah. What is the 1982 film starring Tom Hanks that was based on Dungeons and Dragons?
Mazes and Monsters, of which I still have your DVD that I need to give you.
The best part is, too, is that I actually was like walking around the store talking to other patrons. And this one lady was talking about the D&D tournament, and I was like, oh, and just start chatting with her. And we started talking about D&D movies and talking about Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about LARPing movies. So we talked about role models. We talked about Knights of Badassdom. And I mentioned very loudly, hey, have you ever seen a Tom Hanks movie that was based on D&D called Mazes and Monsters? I don't think anyone heard me, but I said it loud enough that a lot of people could have heard me.
Right. Giving them the answer if they're paying attention.
Well, not paying attention in this case.
Yeah.
And the next question is how much did Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves make at the box office to the nearest million? The answer is $208.2 million.
See, even knowing it, I still would have got it wrong.
the problem I was listening to people. I love listening to people answer the questions. No one thought globally.
Right.
That's the global box office number. They kept giving like just
domestic.
It's run in domestically. Which I think there were some that were close to correct, but
that's a hard one though. Like I don't expect
them to get all the answers.
Yeah, unless you pay attention to box office numbers, which I never do. I couldn't tell you how much money any single movie ever has made.
Yeah, I get that. There's no points for an incorrect question, and that's stated in the rules when Craig gives it to them, so they don't have to get them right. What is the name of the famous Dungeons & Dragons adventure module, and I underline module, that introduces the character Dritz Duerden? When you message this to me, you are also correct, but the answer is also correct, too. It just happens to coincidentally be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The first book for Dritz Duerden was The Crystal Shard, and The Crystal Shard adventure module is the first time that Dritz is brought into the actual D&D space.
Yep. Yeah, I knew that as well, but I was pointing out to you that it said module and that was going to confuse people because I would think most people know him from the books, not from modules.
But good.
It worked out either way. If they're thinking, if they don't know the answer and they just say, I don't know, the Crystal Shard, they'd still be right.
Who is the creator and designer of The Realms?
That would be Ed Greenwood.
Yeah, one person got that right that I heard.
Was it Randy?
No, it was not Randy.
Really?
Yeah, I think they got the right answer, but I don't think he gave it.
Huh.
And what is the name of the main planet on which the Forgotten Realms setting takes place? A lot of people got this right, and people kept saying that Faerun's the continent, it's not the planet. Yep. I think one team answered the Abir Toril as the official name.
Yeah. Toril is what most people call it.
Yeah. So, overall, I love listening to people answer the questions. I think the one team that got the most right was 7 overall.
Yeah.
A lot of people got about 5, and that's fine.
You know? I mean, 5 is still pretty decent.
Oh, yeah. So, where was I at?
I don't know. Well, you were talking about them answering all the questions.
Yeah, yeah, I got that. So they ran through the tournament, and like I said, it was very successful. One team was able to complete the module. And what was funny about the score sheet is that if you follow the score sheet along and you play smartly, you don't get any negatives, really, okay? So if you play too carefully, there's a lot of negatives. But if you play very aggressively, it seems like you just blow through the dungeon real quick and you don't really incur much of a negative loss.
Yeah.
So that's just a lessons learned for me to take into the future things. So one team played very quickly, very methodically, and very carefully. And their score at the end of calculating everything up was 2. Okay. And I was like, well, shit, they lost.
Yeah.
And
it would have been 102, right? Because you get 100 just for
beating. Yeah, you get 100 points just from right out of the gate. That way no one has a negative score, if that's even possible. So I went through and looked at the bonus point sections. They didn't have a character die. A couple teams had players die that brought in their secondaries. But this team didn't have anybody die. And they didn't... He had circled complete the dungeon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to call him over and have him explain to me how far they got. He says, oh, no, they got everything. They killed the Sphinx and they got to the treasure room. And they completed the dungeon in full, and all 4 players escaped. So I was like, oh, okay. So that changed the score from 2 to much higher than 2, like 212 now. Because you get 100 points for completing the dungeon.
Yeah.
So they were the winning team. The team that completed the dungeon won, essentially. And yep. Basically, they deserved it. They completed the dungeon. A lot of people got up to the Sphinx, which is really good to hear. That makes me very happy because I wanted people to get there, but not like, you know, and kind of like have that be the final wall. Because the Sphinx should be very hard to fight and beat. It just should go invisible almost immediately and then start murdering you. You can't do anything about it. So, but if you get the Sword of Sphinx Bane that's at the beginning of the dungeon by completing like the quest throughout the whole dungeon with the gems, you get a +3 sword against the Sphinx, and it does essentially like drag the Dragon's Bane sword is an extra like 3d6 or something like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So you can just burn through that Sphinx in a round or two if it doesn't get a chance to go invisible. So that's what I think happened because they did complete the sword. A lot of people gave me feedback that the hardest fight in the dungeon was the Thaladred, which is perfect because that's what he's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
They said that if they had to fight him to not being bloodied, that they would have all died horribly.
Right.
Because he was CR 10-ish, I think. And
they were
CR 11.
They were 6th level characters.
Yeah. But he had this weird ability. He had 4 attacks with his flail, and then a shield bash attack.
That's a lot of attacks.
And then if you were prone on the ground, which was a condition that you could have gotten from
the shield bash,
you took full damage from his dragon's breath. If you failed the con save on the shield bash, you were stunned. Otherwise, you were just not prone.
Right.
So it's not a fair monster.
I mean, it's not supposed to be. This is a dungeon that you honestly aren't expecting people to always complete.
It's not a fair monster, but you only had to fight him bloodied. So yeah. I think a lot of people were able to basically get past his 21 AC. And I mean, he's still transbait, as we call it in the
I mean, yeah, if you have a person with the right spells.
Yeah. If you cast hold person on him and he failed, and he has a low wisdom, the fight's pretty easy.
Yeah.
But a lot of people struggled to beat him and got beat up the most there. And I'm like, good. He should. The other funny thing that I saw, and this happened during development of the module. when I create stuff, I try to keep everything very fantasy. I don't like bringing in real world politics. I don't like using real world terminologies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a series of tests that a torturer does to the players. Okay.
Yeah, I remember reading it.
The first test, he puts them on a bed of nails and you just take damage.
Yep.
And then the second test is a huge constitution saving throw, and the DC is how much damage they took for the previous nail rack.
Right.
Trap. Then most people use the barbarian to kind of like tank those two, by the way.
Yeah, that's the smart way to do it.
The third test
is the best
one, and I'll read it. So it says, the old man releases the player from the pain wheel and then exposes the skin on their arm. He looks at the player and asks, are you ready? Regardless of an answer, the player must make a DC 99 charisma saving throw. On a success, the player takes no damage. Otherwise, the old man proceeds to rub and twist the arm of the players, causing a painful burn, dealing 1 fire damage.
Yep.
Okay. So when I wrote this, I wrote it as like, and the player and the old man proceeds to give the player an Indian, an Indian bird.
Yeah. Look, growing up, that's what it was always referred to.
And
as.
Growing up, that's what it's referring to. So I, you know, in my due diligence, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't know if there's an issue with calling an Indian bird. I don't know.
Somebody would be offended for sure.
So let me get on this. So I Google, what is the PC name? What is the politically correct name for Indian burn? And there was a bunch of forums that had the same question, and it didn't matter who answered it or from where they were in the world. Okay. And there were people here that says, hey, I'm from Britain. I'm from Italy. I'm from Germany. I'm from some South African country. I'm from India. I'm from Kazakhstan. We all call it Indian burn. And so that, to me, was like, so it's not an America localism, whatever the term is?
I'm sure it started here.
Maybe it started here and then went elsewhere?
But it's so, like, unanimous. That's just what it's referred to as.
Right. So that started me like, what the heck? Why is everyone in the world calling this an Indian burn? Is just Indian burn this accepted PC term for it then? Does everyone just go, we don't have another name for it, so just call it Indian burn, and the Indians are cool with it? Like, how deep does this rabbit hole go? And my wife brought this up to me reading. She's like, I'm really proud of you not using Indian burn. And then I showed her all the results that I got where everyone in the world seems to call it Indian burn. Hey, Japanese dude, what do you call this? Oh, it's an Indian burn. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yep.
By the way, I've seen anime where that's happened, and they've called it an Indian burn in the anime. So, mind blown. So I was very curious as to when this test happened, what the players would react and say. I heard 4 different tables' reactions to this. Every single table, and of all these tables, was our friend table, a young worker at Zenergy Gamers had his friends there, just a bunch of like young white teenagers. There was another table of older people. They were the winners. And the table that I was working for had an African-American kid, an old white dude, a young white dude, and some Latino girl. And all of them called it an Indian burn, too.
Well, that's,
so those
that's
4 tables, everyone called it Indian burn. So I'm just thinking, it was like, I should have just called it an Indian burn. No one would have been mad by it.
Apparently not, no. Locally, probably not. If you had posted it on the internet, you would have found like one asshole on Twitter who would have been upset by it. Oh, that's how it works.
So I'm not going to add Indian burn in, but just...
I just leave it. Like, everyone knows what it is, yeah.
Like, everyone seems to know what it is anyways. There's not a word for it other than Indian burn, but rubbing and twisting the arm seems to work perfectly fine. I just found that extremely funny.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you went down that rabbit hole just to find out what the actual... Yeah, because I would think that nowadays there would be a different term for it, but apparently
you
not.
Think so. Think so. There's not.
Like, it's not really offensive, but everything and anything like that, they're changing the names for it. So, whatever. That's the official title now, Indian Burn.
Maybe we can call it like a Craig Squeeze or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
that's what popular. Next year, if you do another one, it's the Craig Squeeze.
Sounds good.
I love it.
So overall, that was pretty much everything. Again, you know, huge thanks to my local gaming store, Zenergy Gamers. They provided some prize support for all the players. They gave everyone in the store, they could roll a D20, and depending on the result, get that as a discount. So, like, if you rolled a 20, you got 20% off.
That's
and that applied
nice.
To all the miniatures, all the books, and, you know, everything tabletop role-playing related. A lot of people did take advantage of that, which was great. And a lot of people just didn't. And I was like, dude, that mini's $100, 20% off.
I mean, if I've got 20% off, I'm going to find a book I want.
Yeah, I had actually made a little display too. And I think I posted a photo on Instagram or something where like I found all the collector edition covers for Keys to the Golden Vault and Dragonlance and I think Radiant Citadel. And that's all that they had left. They had them hidden in the back for some reason. So I put those out there. It's like, these are selling for a lot if you just want to just turn them over, you know? So I was really happy. It was, you know, the Yu-Gi-Oh tournament had players show up for that, and we didn't interfere with that, so that was great.
Awesome.
All in all, it was a very, very good day. It was very, very, very long.
Another successful tournament. Next year, you're going to have to be prepared for 14 players or 14 tables.
We definitely need a bigger venue if that happens.
Yeah. Zenergy is a pretty large gaming store, but it's a gaming store. And 14 tables is a lot.
Yeah. So, we have 5 minutes remaining. You go ahead and tell me about your silly game you played.
The one that you really do want to play it, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked about it a little bit on here, Dungeon Crawl mm-hmm. Classics, but mm-hmm. no, we're not going to do the uh-huh thing. don't even start. Uh-huh. I didn't do that to you. You done yet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, see you guys. Bye, Craig.
All right, go ahead.
So with Dungeon Crawl Classics, when you are generating a character, you normally start off at zero level. You are not a hero. You are a fucking peasant. And I had rolled up my characters and played through a game last week or 2 weeks ago at zero level. And I made 4 characters. 2 of them did survive. It was my 2 worst characters. One of them had a intelligence of 13, I think, or 14. So he was a wizard. And the other one had a personality, which is effectively your wisdom score. And he was a cleric. He had a personality of like 13. And every other stat they have is garbage. The cleric is the one I ended up actually playing for the first level game. He had a 6 in strength, a 5 agility, and a 4 intelligence.
So that's bad?
Think in D&D terms. Those are D&D numbers.
I mean, like, the commoner, though, has an 8 and everything. That's common.
Well, it not anymore. Not in this game.
Okay.
In this one, you're rolling. So if a commoner has an 8 in agility, this guy has a limp because he has a 5. If a commoner has an 8 in strength, this guy is a weakling because he had a 6 in strength. Commoner has an 8 in intelligence, which is your average. This guy had a 4, so he is half as intelligent as a commoner. That's how bad this character was. But I did my best with him. He was a cleric. He was a follower of Sezrakan, which is the...
What's Sezrakan?
Yeah, Sezrakan is a chaotic god because there are only 3 alignments. There's chaotic, lawful, and neutral, just like original D&D. Chaotic doesn't necessarily mean evil, but Sezrakan is an evil god. He is a god of wizards. He is a god of knowledge and, you know, doing for yourself. Now, that being said, most of our party ended up being chaotic or neutral. We had 1 lawful character. So because of the alignment differences, healing that lawful character is pretty much right out. Healing the neutral characters, I can do it. But don't heal. You know, it's not going to heal them great. The chaotic ones I can heal just fine, so long as they are not of an opposing deity. But anyway, we start running through this dungeon, and everything is actually going very smoothly for like 90% of the dungeon. You know, you're using tactics. We're playing smart as a group. The few encounters that we have, we manage them just fine. And that's good because most of our characters have like 7 or 8 hit points. You know, we are first level characters. And death in this game is very, very real. It's not 5e where you're going to get 3 death saves. It's you go down, you have 1 turn to get some sort of healing or you're dead. Okay. So we go through the whole damn thing, 90% of it. We find a few cool items. You know, we find a little loot. And then we get to the last room. And the last room is where everything went to shit. We walk in there, and the first person in immediately gets charmed by the big bad monster that's in there. The big bad monster was sort of a little demigod. It was like a hive queen demigod. So he walks in, and then everybody else just sees our rogue walk on in thinking, oh, hey, it must be fine to go ahead and go in because the rogue just got up and walked on in. It must be safe. So we all just walk into the room. And then four people get charmed, I think. Four out of six are now charmed to this thing. And it tells us that we need to make a sacrifice to it. Well, we roll initiatives, and one of our wizards ends up being the first person to go. Well, he needs sacrifices for this thing. There's a whole shitload of them right near us, and he casts the sleep spell. And gets a very high roll in this game. In this one, when you cast a spell, you have to roll a spell check, and the higher your roll, the harder it is to resist that spell. And I think he had like a 26 or some shit like that. So we all just fail our fucking saving throws. He puts everyone to fucking sleep. At that point, we're like, oh, well, this is a TPK for sure. The DM was very nice. And he allowed that one character that is still awake another saving throw. The way the module was written, that was not a thing. But the DM opted to allow it. And the wizard made his fucking saving throw. So he ends up waking up the other wizard, who also casts sleep. When Drew is the guy who's the one who got woken up, when he made that character, you roll on a chart to see how good you are at certain spells. His sleep spell, he is a savant at it. He is a fucking master at that spell. So he puts every single point he has into it. You can burn stats to get boost and everything. And he rolled a natural 30 on a D30, which is what he rolls for that spell because he's a savant. So he hit the highest fucking number he could possibly hit for this spell. And when you do that with the sleep spell, it literally puts everything within like 400 yards to sleep. The fucking insects go to sleep. The plants go to sleep. Everything goes to sleep. And he can set the parameter for waking them up. So the parameter he set for waking them up was if they get backhanded, they wake up. So at that point, he just starts backhanding everybody in the group except for the other wizard who put him to sleep. Because fuck that guy. So he ends up tying him up, leaving him in there. We end up looting everything in there, leaving the place. There was a couple other things that happened in the process of that my brain completely forgot about till now. Back in the initiative thing, there was actually two other people that went before the wizard. There was the fighter and I think the rogue. Well, because they were charmed and they needed a sacrifice, the fighter ended up killing the rogue in one round of combat. Then everybody at that point, I think, gets put to sleep. Yeah, everybody gets put to sleep, and then the wizard who put him to sleep walks up next to the hive queen because she was telling him, come to me. She then stabs him in the chest with a bee stinger, injecting larva inside of him.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then he wakes up the other wizard, or somebody wakes up the other wizard. Then he casts the sleep, puts everything to sleep. The one wizard gets tied up and then turns into a wasp man shortly after. And just he's asleep forever. At that point, we then loot everything. I end up sacrificing the little hive queen to my god, you know, for bonus points, basically, kissing up to my deity to get good shit. And we loot the place and walk out successfully. But yeah, that game, that's the closest I've come to a TPK in 20 years. yeah, like that was, if the DM hadn't allowed that save, we were all just fucking dead. But overall, fucking great time. The amount of chaos in that game, and I don't mean it chaos as in lawful neutral chaos, I just mean the fucking chaoticness of having low-level characters who are just there to survive and just there to get loot and sort of everybody else be damned in the process. Mm-hmm. It, like, that reminded me. That was the. It felt so much like when I first started tabletoping. Because yeah, those games are just pure chaos, man.
I mean, that's what those games are or were back in the day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a fucking blast with it. At some point, I am going to run a proper Dungeon Crawl Classics campaign, but I have to wrap up my Pathfinder one first. So another 6 months or so before I could even start thinking about it.
When you were talking about that, it reminded me of another thing that actually happened during the tournament. All right. The teenage group of that Dimitri ran.
Yeah.
The first thing that they decided to do was get married, because they picked somebody that had trained in religion, so they had ceremony. They're like, okay, we all got to get married to each other, so we all get plus two to the AC.
If you're going via the rules, yeah, I see no reason to not do that.
Yeah, there was no reason not to do
that. It's a tournament, and you're trying to win.
I'm definitely going to add in a rule that no one can get married while in the dungeon. just because I don't want that to be a thing. I jokingly said as I walked by, and I think that Dimitri actually enforced this, which was fine. I was like, no, they would need a real life hour for the whole ceremony. So I think they did it on a short rest. And that reminded me too when I saw them do that was, is someone on Dungeon Master Resource on Facebook was complaining that his group had found a way to get infinite AC because they were like making clones and simulacrums of each other, and like they were all in a polyamorous relationship, so they were all marrying each other, thus stacking the two AC or something like that.
I thought you had I thought you could only make.
I thought that too. I was like, I'm not going to look into that. This whole question seems dumb. You should DM need to control that shit.
So yeah, no. Yeah, oh, yeah.
You only get one. You don't get 17.
Yeah, you as the DM have to have control over your party. If you think that they've found a loophole that lets you break rules or do whatever, you can just say no. I'm not gonna sit here and read all of Simulacrum right now. It's a moderately long spell. It costs 1,500 gold per casting, so there is that.
Yeah.
Simulacrum though is a very powerful spell because it casts spells it casts spells at your level.
Yep.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, at the very last sentence, if you cast the spell again, any currently active duplicates you created with the spell are instantly destroyed. So yeah. Simulacrum won't work, and I'm fairly sure Clone, you can only have one active at a time.
But they were doing it with a whole party and like marrying each other around and like some kind of weird daisy chain.
I mean, honestly, they could have just gone and paid a bunch of peasants 100 gold each to marry them.
Which would have made more sense.
Yeah. A lot cheaper, too. You're not going to have to throw 2,000 gold for a fucking clone and 1,500 for a simulacrum.
But I married him first. I get his treasure fortune.
Anyway.
I'm excited for next year's tournament. I actually already have the idea of what I want to do. My ambitious goal for next year is to create a map that's stagnant. And the tournament that you create is random. Does that make sense?
Say it again.
So the biggest expense that I have right now,
yeah,
is that I have to spend $30 per table to print out a map. And if I have two maps, which I've always had done, it's $60 per table.
Okay?
And that's just the cost for the maps. Okay. So
How big are these maps? Like, why aren't you
just? It's just both. So there's a story to that, and I think it's a corporate decision on the Office Max and Staples
thing. Was it like a battle mat?
Yeah, it was just a piece of paper.
Then why don't you have just print that shit on your own printer at home?
Because it's 2 foot by 3 foot.
Well, that's what I was asking. How big is it? Okay.
So I can't print them as blueprints anymore. Okay. Though I still can sneak it in as a blueprint, which only costs me $5. And that's great. But what happens is that they say that takes too much ink and it will ruin the blueprint machine because it's only supposed to print blue lines and with some very light color. So my initial thought was is I could make a black and white map. And I started kind of trying doing that when we started the beginning of this year where it came like a dungeon room a day thing. That kind of whole idea failed.
It's a great idea that I don't have the tenacity to work through.
The word is discipline.
That too.
So like a black and white map, I could probably get for a lot cheaper. But what I was thinking was, is I could probably develop a nice big map, okay, that has like default rooms in it. Let's say like a laboratory and like a gymnasium and a death pit and stuff like that. And I have all those rooms out on one map, okay. Then the actual tournament that I run, I could randomly generate and basically create the tournament based on that map, but have a number of different options. So if I ever ran a tournament again, I could use the same maps again, but generate a different tournament from the random rules.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of effort, though.
Probably. It'd be a lot of effort to create it, and then you have to create the random dungeons. But it would save you a lot of money.
Yeah, but like I said, this was a free event, and I want to keep it as a free event, but, you know.
But if it continues to grow, you're not going to have an option. Yeah.
I don't even know if I could do 7 tables again next year.
Right.
You know, so yeah. It's a thing that I got to think of and come to a good solution for. Because I want to do this again, but like I said, the black and white maps may work, but I just, Incarnate is coming out with a black and white map generator set of tools.
Okay.
But it's a two come show up in the near future. And I have yet to see that. They showed it off, I think, last year some kind.
Right.
And if they had that out, I would have done that this year. So if they have that running by next year, I might be able to use that.
Yeah, because black and white's just, it's going to be cheaper.
Yeah, I could print it out at $5 a sheet as a blueprint then because there's no color. It's black and white. So that's like the best option that I have going for me. But yeah, it's pretty expensive to run the tournament.
I mean,
as much as I like doing it, but it's just the color maps.
I mean, there are a lot of map generators out there. If you're not looking for pretty, if you're just looking for maps that are black and white.
Yeah, like there was one tool that I found that was doing black and white maps, but it wasn't varied enough in the art tools that it provided to you to generate really good looking rooms.
Yeah, they're not going to be pretty, but
yeah.
if you just need to get something on paper, might be the way to go.
On paper, but also a little more than a room. I don't want 1E dungeon art that's empty. There's nothing there. I need to have a visual spectrum. I need a visual medium for people to interact with.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, if that's what you want, then go for it. I personally am happy just doing fucking Theater of Mind. We can't
do that in a tournament though.
They did it for fucking decades.
Yeah, and look how successful it was.
Well, people just,
if you want it to be fair, people need to see the same rooms that you want them to see.
That being said, you know, you're also the one who's trying to push it to higher level of art. Yeah, but if you're trying to save money, all you need is squares. You just need to be able to see where people are at and where things are located.
Yeah, but then it falls into DM will forget something that's supposed to be in the room that wasn't there or something along those lines. But if I could put it all on there on the map and it's all there for people to see and interact with, then that issue doesn't exist.
I mean, yeah, it is what it is. You know, you'll have to find that happy medium, hopefully one that's not going to cost you hundreds of dollars.
You said find the happy medium.
I did, median.
That was a pun for everybody out there.
Yeah. I said medium because I'm on Donjon because we were talking about black and white maps. If you're not familiar with Donjon, I'm there, and literally room size medium is right in front of me. So I'm staring at that.
I think that's the tool I used for the initial start. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't meeting enough needs.
Yeah. I love Donjon for making random maps, but yeah, it's probably not going to work for you what you want, because this isn't a build your own map. This is a random map generator.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of something like just like a giant random map that I can print out once and then use over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because I got a couple of questions if I'm going to run other tournaments throughout the year.
Oh.
And I'm like,
let's stick with
mine doing that.
Let's stick with one a year for the moment and see where that goes.
Yeah. I mean, like I could definitely, run different modules, but if I had a random like grumpy dungeon tournament maker, essentially, that you could roll a tournament with, and then the same map could be used for each tournament, and the rooms are the same, the descriptions would be the same, but what's in there changes, then that may work.
Well, I think that about covers everything.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, Craig. We're out. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Bye. Mm-hmm. Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
Uh-huh. No one gets that joke.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, every one of my players gets that joke. We were all doing those noises the other night.
No one watches Sesame Street anymore.
Well, I doubt. Is it even still in the air anymore?
Yeah, it's on HBO.
That's just weird. I'm out. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.